We believe in God, the Eternal Father.
We believe in the Bible to be the Word of God.
We believe in being honest, true, chaste, benevolent, virtuous.
We believe that through the atonement of Christ, all mankind.
We also believe the Book of Mormon to be the Word of God.
We may say that we follow the admonition of Paul. We believe all things. We hope all things. We have endured many things.
Welcome to Why I Believe today. My name is Rick Starr, and our guest today is Janice Frege, who is the Curator of Education at the Arab American National Museum in Dearborn, Michigan. Janice, welcome to the program today.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
I really am interested in talking to you about some of the things we're going to talk about today. Janice, you have an Arabic background. Can you explain to our listeners what does that mean as far as your background or your heritage?
Sure, I would love to. The Arab world is made up of 22 countries, and so if somebody is of Arab heritage, it means that they come from one of those 22 Arab countries, and those countries include areas in the Gulf, so for example, Iraq, Saudi Arabia, Oman, Yemen, places like that, and then we have the Levant region, which is Syria, Palestine, Lebanon, Jordan. And then we have the North African Arab countries, which include Mauritania, Morocco, Libya, Algeria, and some of those countries. So basically, if somebody comes from one of those 22 countries, they are considered to be an Arab.
That's a lot more than I think many people think. When people hear the term Arab, they usually think of probably Saudi Arabia, and you probably get that a lot, don't you?
Yes, we do.
Now, you're the curator of education at the Arab American National Museum. What do you do there, Janice?
So I I run the education department here, and the education department is basically designed to do several things. But one main thing is that we are very passionate about teaching people about Arab culture and Islam, because there are a lot of misconceptions about Arab culture and about Muslims. But we specifically focus on Arab Americans and Muslim Americans. And so we do a lot of different programs. One of the main things that we do is we do tours of our exhibits. We have three permanent exhibits, and then we have two temporary galleries that rotate every few months. So we tour our visitors through those exhibits. In addition to that, we do crafts with children and adults that, you know, basically with the crafts, they have the opportunity to do something fun, but at the same time, learn about the arts from the Arab world. And then in addition to that, we do a lot of cultural competency workshops where, for example, we're in Metro Detroit, which has the largest concentration of Arab Americans in the United States. And there are a lot of people in this area who do not know anything about Arab culture or about Muslims. So they basically come to us as a resource, and we do full-day workshops, we do half-day workshops, we even do 2 to 3 day workshops where we basically enlighten people about our rich heritage. We talk about the history of immigration from the Arab world to America. And then we also, you know, address stereotypes and all sorts of things.
And is your outreach just to the Detroit area, or are you reaching out to all across America?
We are reaching out to people all across the United States. In fact, we have some workshops scheduled in Chicago and Austin, Texas, in the next few months. And so those workshops are specifically for educators. Because, you know, educators are very important people in our society because they're relaying information to our youth. And so we want to make sure that those educators really know what they're talking about when it comes to the Arab world and Arab Americans. So we've been reaching out to a lot of teachers across the United States, and teachers have actually been reaching out to us as well, which is good. I think that's a good sign.
So as you... are going about your work, what do you find, Janice, are the biggest stereotypes that you have to overcome with the Arab culture and the understanding of that culture?
I would say the one that I hear the most is, you know, a lot of people think that Arabs are monolithic. We're all one people. We all have the same story.
Mm-hmm.
We're all the same religion. we all act the same way. We all look the same way. And that is absolutely not the case at all. I mean, like I mentioned, there are 22 countries. And within those countries, there's a lot of diversity. So, I mean, my parents are from Palestine. And within Palestine alone, you know, the physical features range quite a bit. The dialects are very different. The religions are different. And so, and that's just one country. So I think, you know, when people come here to the Arab American National Museum, they're very surprised when they meet our staff because our staff is so diverse.
Hmm.
We have a woman that works here who's 6 feet tall, and we have one that works here that's 4'9", and they're both from Lebanon. And, you know, and one has very light skin and blue eyes and the other and red hair, and the other one is very dark, dark hair, dark eyes, dark skin. So, and they're both from Lebanon. So anyway, and also we have Christians that are on our staff. We have Muslims that are on our staff. We have atheists that are on our staff. You know, so there's just such a wide range. So just by coming to our museum and meeting our staff alone, you know, that sort of dispels a lot of stereotypes in itself.
Yeah. Well, that's great that you're doing that work. I must admit that the reason I asked you is because I myself have a lot of those images of what an Arab is. And and it's great to know that, you know, 22 countries represent the Arabic culture. And that is amazing. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned that in Palestine alone, there are many different religions. I think another stereotype that a lot of us have is that Arabs are Muslims. And that is, that connection is, you know, kind of permanent in our minds. Speak to that a little bit. What are the different religions that are in the Arabic culture?
Okay, so in the Arab world itself, there are about 290 to 295 million people that live there. And about 95% of the people there are Muslims. There are Shia Muslims and there are Sunni Muslims. Most of the Muslims in the Arab world are Sunni, but then there is a significant Shiite population. So in addition to the Muslim population, there are also a lot of Christians that live there. So most of the Christians that live there are Orthodox, so either Antiochian Orthodox, Greek Orthodox, or Syrian Orthodox. You know, there's a lot of categories within the Orthodox faith. And then there are also a lot of Arabs that are Catholic, Protestant, I mean, you name it. Now, what's happened over the years is the Christian population in the Arab world has sort of decreased over time.
Mm-hmm.
And then one, and I'll get back to the Christians in just a second, but there are also a lot of Arabs that are Jewish. And that's another thing that, you know, really blows people's minds. But there are quite a few Arabs who are Jewish, and I think people think that's an oxymoron. But
yeah, you don't think of that. You think of them as two completely different cultures.
Right, right. I mean, Arab is an ethnic classification, and being Jewish is your religious identity. So you can definitely belong to both groups.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense.
Right. So prior to 1948, there were a lot of Arabs that were Jewish that were living in Iraq, Syria, Tunisia, and other parts of North Africa, and then Palestine. But after the creation of the State of Israel in 1948, many of those Arab Jews actually moved to that area.
So
now we don't have as many Arab Jews living in the region, but there are still significant populations there. Now, one thing I wanted to mention about the diversity, the religious diversity, is that here in the United States, there are actually more Arab American Christians than Muslims, and that's because Arab American Christians have been immigrating to the United States since the 1800s. Well, even before that, but the first major wave of immigration from the Arab world to the United States started in the 1800s, and most of them were Christian. And so that's why we have about 67% of Christian Arabs living in the United States.
Hmm. That's amazing. Now, is this your background as well? You were raised in Michigan.
I was.
Is your family also a Christian?
Yep. My family comes from a town in Palestine called Ramallah. And mm-hmm. Ramallah, at the time that my parents lived there, was about 99% Christian. Now it's changed a lot over the years. Now it's predominantly Muslim, but at the time it was mostly Christian. And mostly Greek Orthodox and Catholic. So my family is all Greek Orthodox.
Mm-hmm. And you, Janice, are a Mormon.
Yes.
Interested in hearing that story. Are you the only member in your family who joined the church?
Technically, no. I do have a brother that is still on the church records, but he does not identify with being LDS. He hasn't gone to church in about 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I consider myself to be the only member in my family.
Okay. So Janice, you are a Mormon raised in a Christian Arab family there in Michigan.
Right.
Talk a little bit about how you came to know the church.
Okay. So I grew up going to an Antiochian Orthodox church, and it is a very beautiful church in a suburb outside of Detroit. And growing up, we attended regularly. However, I believe that my parents attended and encouraged us to attend more for cultural reasons, because most of the congregation was made up of people from their particular town in Palestine.
Mm-hmm.
So I remember liking church when I was a child, but then as I got older, I didn't really like it as much. There were just certain things about the church that I wasn't really pleased with. And then, to make a really long story short, when I got older, I sort of started questioning the existence of God, actually. And at that stage, my family wasn't going to church at all.
Mm-hmm.
So, let me back up. Prior to my little atheist phase that I went through, I was going to church with my neighbors quite a bit. They went to a Protestant church, and I would go with them. But then I just didn't really feel like – I didn't feel like I belonged there. And so even though the people were really nice and everything, I didn't really click with the church.
Mm-hmm.
So when I was a teenager, I went through my atheist phase. And in the meantime, my older brother – was going through a phase where he was looking for truth, and he wasn't really pleased with the church that we grew up going to, so he was exploring all sorts of churches. And we both had some mutual friends that were LDS, and my brother started asking them questions about the faith. Well, my father suffered a stroke during that time, and my dad ran a shoe repair in a mall. And my brother had to take it over once my dad got sick. And so my brother was in the shoe repair one day, and the missionaries came in to get their shoes fixed. So my brother, talked to them, and again, skipping a lot of details, he ended up getting baptized mm-hmm. and was very pleased with his decision. During that time, he was trying to encourage the rest of my family to, you know, listen to the discussions, but none of us really expressed an interest at that time.
And how many siblings? Myself, how many siblings did you have, Janice?
I have three siblings altogether. There are
okay.
two boys and two girls.
Okay.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
So, my brother, again, told me about the church, told me how great it was, tried to encourage me to meet with the elders. I really had no interest at that time because, again, I was still in my atheist phase. But one thing that I got out of his experience was, I was just really impressed by his dedication to God in general. And then it started getting me to think, well, maybe there is something to this whole religion thing, and maybe there is a God, and maybe Jesus Christ is our Savior, and, you know, all these things. And so I started reading on my own a book, and I can't remember the exact name of it, but it was essentially something like, you know, Christianity for Dummies, or Reading the Bible for Dummies, or something like that.
Uh-huh.
So I decided that I would just explore. You know, I thought, what do I have to lose if I just, you know, sort of start the spiritual journey? And if good things come out of it, then I'll continue on that path. And otherwise, I just won't anymore, and I'll continue in my atheist ways. So I read this this book, and it encouraged the readers to read 1 John, because that section of the New Testament really talks a lot about God's love. And the author of that book, you know, felt strongly that it's important that Christians understand the love that God has for all of us. So anyway, I read that, and immediately I just felt the Spirit. I felt like, wow, this is amazing. I'm going to start reading the Bible on my own. I'm not going to go to any church. I'm going to pray regularly and see what happens. And so I was praying, and I was reading, and I just felt this newfound spiritual energy. I just felt a lot of love in my heart for people that I had a hard time loving. I had more of a desire to serve people. It was wonderful. Mm-hmm. But again, I was really reluctant to go to any church, because I felt, well, there are so many in the world that all claim to be true. So if there was a true church, how would I know which one was true?
And your brother had already been baptized at this point, right?
Yes, he had already been baptized. And of course, he kept encouraging me to read the Book of Mormon and to go to church with him and all those things. But I didn't want to be influenced by any by anybody. I just wanted this to be purely my own journey and my own decision. So one night, my brother and I were talking, and I was kind of going through a difficult period in my life. I was young. I was 18. And I had to grow up really fast, and it was pretty hard. And so I think I was compelled to be humble, if you will. Mm-hmm. So I was asking my brother a lot of questions about the Mormon faith and about the Book of Mormon, specifically about Joseph Smith. And that was the first time that I would say I was really open to listening to what he had to say. And immediately, I can't even put this in words, but it was definitely the most profound experience I've ever had in my entire life, where the Spirit made it extremely clear to me that everything my brother was saying was absolutely true, and that I needed to apply everything that he was teaching me, and that I needed to be baptized. It was very unexpected. It was very unexpected. And so I was sobbing uncontrollably. My brother was very happy, of course, because he had been waiting for that moment. And that was a Saturday night. The very next morning, I called the missionaries and told them I wanted to be baptized. And they were very surprised, because they had met me several times, and I always sort of brushed them off. So they were quite astonished, but pleased, of course.
Yes.
And so I took the discussions and got baptized 2 weeks later.
You know, that phone call, a missionary receiving that type of a phone call, has got to be the most wonderful event in their whole mission.
Yes, definitely.
For those of you who are just joining us, you're listening to Why I Believe on the Mormon Channel. Today, our guest is Janice Frage, who is an Arab American curator of education at the Arab American National Museum in Michigan. And we're just speaking of your conversion story. I'm interested, Janice, you felt a pretty strong spiritual witness before you took the lessons from the missionaries, and I also take it before you read the Book of Mormon.
Yeah.
What was your experience after that, as you got into reading the Book of Mormon and the challenges that the missionaries gave to you to learn more about the gospel?
I just ate up everything that the missionaries told me. I didn't hesitate at all with any of the challenges they gave me. They told me to read the sections of the Book of Mormon. I read them with excitement, and everything just felt so right. It felt like what I had been waiting for my whole life, that I never realized I was waiting for. And it was just such a profound experience.
That's wonderful. Janice, when you started investigating the church, what was the reaction of your family? Your brother had already been baptized, of course, but what were your parents and other siblings saying?
My younger brother was very young at the time. He was 12 years old, and he really looked up to me, and so he was happy for me. He could see that my decision was making me happy, so he was very supportive. My sister was also very supportive, a little confused because it sort of came out of left field, but she was very excited for me. My parents, honestly, the day that I first met with the missionaries to have my first discussion, it was my brother and the elders and myself, and we were, you know, having the first discussion, and my parents called my brother out of the room to talk to him, and actually they were telling him that they were very disappointed in my decision to get baptized. And they told him to leave the elders for a moment to talk to them so that they could express their concern to me. Well, I remember when I was leaving the room, I said a silent prayer in my heart. I said, Heavenly Father, you know how strongly I feel about joining this church. At this point, because of the witness I received, I know I can't not join the church. I have to join the church. And so if my parents are upset, please soften their hearts. So I went into the room where my parents were. I talked to them. They expressed their concern. They didn't understand why I was going to a new church when we had a perfectly fine church. And then, honestly, within minutes, they completely changed their tune and accepted my decision and allowed me to go back and finish my discussion with elders.
Oh,
and
that is wonderful.
Yeah, it was great, and they attended my baptism, and they actually even clapped after I when I came out of the water. They clapped, so it was very cute. Now, I do have to say, however, that the challenge came when I decided to go on a mission. That was when I got a lot of opposition from my parents and from a lot of people.
Where did you serve your mission, Janice?
I served in the New Zealand Wellington Mission. And that was in 2002 to 2003.
That's great. Well, congratulations on your decision. That's what a great decision and a great a story about your feelings about your witness and the way you gained your testimony. That is a wonderful story.
Thank you.
I'm interested, Janice, being a Mormon in an Arab culture, working at a museum that is teaching about the Arab culture. What are the reactions you get? What are the challenges? Maybe there are stereotypes that people have of Mormons that you have to overcome, as well as trying to teach others about stereotypes that they have of Arabs. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, I'm in a very unique position here at the Arab American National Museum. Well, first of all, when people find out that I'm Christian, they are floored. Because, again, there's that stereotype that I mentioned earlier that people think that all Arabs are Muslim. So that's the first thing. Then when I tell them I'm LDS, I get a wide range of reactions. You know, a lot of people, again, there's another stereotype that Arab parents are extremely strict or conservative. So people will always ask me, well, how did your parents allow you to do this? You know, was it really difficult for them to accept this, because it is, you know, going against the cultural grain. And, you know, that's a valid reaction, I would say. And I address that. It is very interesting being a part of both cultures, if you will, the LDS culture and the Arab culture. And explaining each culture to the other is also very interesting and can be challenging at some time, at some point. So, for example, when I'm at the museum with my colleagues or with the visitors that come in here, trying to explain, you know, that not all Mormons are a certain way, you know, that it's just interesting because a lot of people do have stereotypes about LDS people, and they say they think that we're polygamists or that we are ultra-conservative or that we can't dance or anyway, there's just so many stereotypes that I don't have to go into because I'm sure all the listeners are very aware of them.
Well, yeah, we've heard them.
Yes. So it is very interesting being in that position where I am the only LDS person that works in this institution And I should mention that we're part of a greater institution called ACCESS, and it stands for the Arab Community Center for Economic and Social Services. Mm-hmm. And we have a total of about 200 employees, and I am the only LDS Arab that works for the institution. Mm. So, but one thing that I am pleased about is that when people do read news articles about LDS people, or, for example, during the elections when Mitt Romney was running, and then with, you know, television shows that exploit our beliefs, people will come up to me directly and ask me to clarify things for them. Mm-hmm. And so, and I think because my coworkers, those that are Arab anyway, and others, because they are very, I guess, they're used to being judged or misunderstood in a lot of ways, they go out of their way to really make sure they understand as much as they can about the Mormon faith before they make their own judgments. Mm-hmm. So I'm really appreciative of the fact that they do come to me whenever they have questions.
Yeah, that's great that they give you that opportunity and that trust to explain or get past the stereotypes they may have.
Right.
You're in a really unique position there as an educator in an Arab museum.
Right.
And as a Mormon.
Yes.
Do you have any interesting missionary stories that you might be able to share with us about as you've shared the gospel with others or they, you know, tried to share with them what Mormons are about?
Honestly, I feel like I have missionary opportunities every day. Mm-hmm. Because people are constantly asking me about the church and about my beliefs on certain things. So most of the people that work here, we're very up to date on all the current events that are happening and all the controversial things that are happening in the world or in the art scene or whatever. And so a certain issue will come up and then they'll say, well, what is your view on this? Well, how do the Mormons feel about this certain mm-hmm. thing? And one thing, honestly, I think my favorite thing is about working here is that I have come to discover the similarities between our faith and the Muslim faith. Mm-hmm. I mean, I already knew about the similarities before I worked here, but now that I share an office with, you know, some Muslims, we have these very deep discussions about what we each believe, and I have just felt way more of a connection with my Muslim brothers and sisters than I ever had before, and I feel like they feel the same way. There's just something about that connection that I have felt with my Muslim colleagues and friends. Something that I can't even express. It's very, very special.
Yeah, I'd like to explore that a little bit with you. First of all, you're listening to Why I Believe on the Mormon Channel. Our guest today is Janice Frege, who is the curator of education at the Arab American National Museum in Dearborn, Michigan. Janice, you mentioned a connection there with your Muslim brothers and sisters in the museum. I find it interesting. I had a friend once who worked often in the Middle East, and he referred to his Arab brothers and sisters as cousins, basically. When you consider the Book of Mormon and its origin and how it relates to the Old Testament and the New Testament, it's very interesting, the connection of all of those. And even with the Islam culture or the Islam religion, can you expound on that a little bit? Talk a little bit about, because you travel, you go back to the Middle East and other countries that are mm-hmm. Arabic. Talk a little bit about that connection with Mormonism and the history there.
Well, there's so many places I can take this, but I will just talk briefly on a few points. And one thing I will mention is I am actually going to Egypt on Friday, and I'm very excited. Yeah, and I will be there for a week, and I used to live in Egypt, so I'm very excited to go.
Really?
But, yes, yeah. So during the time that I lived there, obviously, it's a predominantly Muslim country, so I got to meet a lot of Muslims and become very close with many of them. And so in my travels, and in my conversations that I've had with Muslims and in my experiences visiting mosques and other institutions, I have really, really felt that not only that there's a connection between our faith and Islam, but I have also felt that the Lord wants many people to really understand that connection. I have felt that so strongly, and even things that have been mentioned in my patriarchal blessing and other blessings that I've received, it's been made clear to me that, you know, that we need to understand those connections. Mm-hmm. So the connections that I have witnessed or that I've noticed are that, one, Arabs, whether they're Muslim or Christian, are strongly encouraged to put their family first. Mm-hmm. So in Arab culture, there's no such thing as, and again, I'm speaking in generalities because there's a lot of diversity in the Arab world. But for the most part, there's no such thing as independence. You are a part of a collective unit. You're part of a greater family unit. And so the decisions that you make are not just your decisions. You have to consult with your family and get their advice and their opinion on everything. Also, respect, family respect is very important as well. The other thing is the importance of extended family. So when I mentioned, oh, yeah, I'm really close with my family, I'm not just referring to my siblings or my parents. I'm talking about my second cousins, my third cousins, my, you know, everybody. And we typically, Arabs, have very large families. So I remember when I was learning about the importance of family in the LDS faith, I thought, well, yeah, of course. You know, I didn't even have to think twice about that because that's how we were raised. Family is the most important. No matter how old you are, no matter if you're married or single or have children of your own, like your family, your extended family, they're always going to be number one. Immediate and extended family, I should say, will always be number one. And so that's definitely one connection. The other thing that I have been so touched by in my interaction with Muslims is just the devotion and dedication that they have to their faith. And that's something that you don't see a lot today. I honestly would say that I feel more connected with my Muslim friends than I do with my non-LDS Christian friends. Because I don't have to explain myself when I'm talking to my Muslim friends. So, for example, you know, we don't drink alcohol. We don't smoke. We don't drink coffee and all those things. And even though, you know, there are some things in Islam that they don't do as well, like, for example, they don't drink alcohol, but they do drink coffee, and there are many Muslims that do smoke. But because they know that not drinking coffee or tea and not smoking is a part of my religion, they don't give me a hard time about it because they understand that if there's something that your religion says is important, it is important for you to adhere to that. So I don't ever have to justify, you know, why I do or why I don't do certain things because they get it because they're the same way with the tenets of their faith. So go ahead.
I was just going to say, that is one stereotype that I do believe many do have of the Islam religion. It seems like there is always a great devotion to their religion.
Definitely. It's a part of their lives, just like us. You know, I believe that we belong to a lived religion. We live it every day by following the commandments, by praying and reading every day, and being very active with our callings and serving everybody, you know, that it's a part of our lives. We don't just go to church on Sundays and leave and that's it. And it's the same thing with Muslims as well. They pray five times a day. They attend the mosque regularly. They're always serving, you know, and then they follow their health laws as well by abstaining from, you know, certain animals and things like that by not drinking alcohol. So anyway, so that's, again, because their religion is a lived one and ours is a lived one, I do feel a greater connection with Muslims.
And Janice, just you mentioned that you do travel a lot. What do you do when you travel to these countries?
Well, I travel for different reasons. Sometimes they're work-related, sometimes not as much. But with this particular trip, we've been selected. When I say we, I'm referring to the museum. The United States State Department selected the museum, the Arab American National Museum, to represent the United States in an exhibit that will be shown in Cairo at the Biennale there in December. And so basically what we've done is we've selected four Arab American artists, and they will be exhibiting their work in Cairo. Mm-hmm. And that will be a very unique experience because a lot of Arabs in the Arab world have never really been exposed to Arab American art. And so we're going to, you know, be talking about the differences there. You know, how is Arab American art different than mm-hmm. Arab art? And we're also going to have some public programming. But anyway, so I'm going to be going on Friday, in 2 days, to Cairo with one of my colleagues who is not Arab and who doesn't speak Arabic and has never been to Cairo. I'm going to be basically helping her find her way around since I lived in Cairo. Mm-hmm. And in addition, I'm going to be working with the people at the Biennale to find out what sorts of educational and public programming we can hold in December during the time that the exhibit is shown. Hmm. So, but I mean, other than that, like, I love to travel to the Arab world and other places because I really feel strongly that I personally, I don't want to speak on behalf of everybody, but I feel that I personally need to travel and need to meet as many different kinds of people as possible because I feel that it helps me to understand Heavenly Father even mm-hmm. a little bit better, and it helps me to understand His creations and His plan for me. And one reason why I say that is because, without getting too personal, my patriarchal blessing actually encourages me to travel. And so, honestly, that's one reason why I do it.
What a wonderful blessing.
No kidding. No kidding. So, yeah, so that's something that I really enjoy doing.
Let me ask you, Janice, as you travel, like you said, you're going to Cairo, and you're uh-huh. obviously going to build an exhibit there that is an attempt to bridge, again, cultures. And
right.
and there you are now educating people on that side of the globe, I assume, about Arab Americans. What are
yes.
some of the stereotypes that they have of the culture here that you have to overcome?
That's a very good question.
And while you're addressing that, in addition, I assume that there are times when you have to express to others on that side of the globe that you are also a Mormon. What are yeah. What are the stereotypes or impressions that they have there when you share that part of you with them?
Okay. So to answer your first question, in my experience traveling and living in the Arab world, one stereotype that Arabs in the Arab world have of Arab Americans is that many of us aren't very connected to our cultures, mm-hmm. Or we become too quote-unquote Americanized or too Westernized, or we don't appreciate the culture as much as we should.
Mm-hmm.
And so those are definite stereotypes, and honestly, some of those stereotypes can be true,
mm-hmm.
But not necessarily. It just depends. Again, you know, stereotypes are very dangerous because you're assuming that a whole group of people acts a certain way. And so there are Arab Americans that are very disconnected from their Arab heritage and who don't really care about it. But on the contrary, there are many who are very, very interested in their culture and who take pride in that. A lot of the staff here, they were born and raised in America. However, they are so passionate about, clearing up misunderstandings about Arab culture.
Mm-hmm.
And many of them, like for myself, I took Arabic as an adult because I didn't understand, or when I was growing up, I understood Arabic, but I didn't speak it. And I felt that if I was going to be totally connected to my culture, I needed to learn the language. And so I took Arabic at BYU and did a study abroad in Egypt, which is one reason why I live there. So there's that. And I think, you know, because a lot of people, not just in the Arab world, but a lot of people in other countries in general might think that America is extremely liberal or extremely, just kind of chaotic. And there's so many crazy things that happen here all the time. And so sometimes some people in the Arab world might think, you know, Arab Americans are kind of like that too. But what I find is, like, with my distant, I only have distant relatives that live in the Arab world right now. Most of them came after the war in 1967. But when I do interact with the distant relatives that do live there, they're actually very impressed to find out that myself and my siblings and many of my relatives, cousins, friends who are Arab American are still very connected to the culture. So
that's good. Have you been back to your, we'll get to that in a minute. I just wanted to ask you, have you been back to your homeland in Palestine?
I have. Yes, I have. Unfortunately, I was only able to go for 3 days. It was when I was studying in Cairo. I took a 3-day vacation to Israel and Palestine, and I was able to go to Jerusalem and Bethlehem and Ramallah, which is where my parents are from. And it was an amazing experience. And I was going to go over the summer, but things didn't work out. But I'm definitely planning on going again. And and I will say that I'm the only person in my family who's ever gone. Like, my parents, once they immigrated to the United States, never went back, and my siblings have never been there. So,
were you able to locate cousins, distant relatives?
I was, yes. I stayed with them, and it was a very, very amazing experience.
Oh, that's
and I
great.
Felt, you know, it was interesting because I felt very connected to the land, even though I had never been there before. It was something I can't even really explain, but it was incredible.
That's great. And getting back to the other question, what how do you deal with being a Mormon as you explain that to people on the other side of the world and that culture?
To be honest, that that's a very tricky issue to deal with because, well, first I'll start with this. A lot of people in the Arab world have never heard of our religion. So yeah, they don't really have an opinion either way because they don't know anything about us. Now, there is the BYU Jerusalem Center, so I did find that when I was in Palestine, Israel, that there were, you know, people that said, oh, you know, don't you have that big building, you know, what goes on there and things like that. But they didn't really, many of the ones I talked to anyway, didn't really have any opinions per se about people of our faith. They were just curious about what we were doing there and why we had a center there. And then when I was in Egypt, so I was living there at 2 different times, and the first time I was there as a part of the study abroad through BYU, and we were advised to not talk about our faith at all. So people were curious as to why we were different than what they thought Americans should be like. We weren't partying. We weren't drinking. All the girls lived with the girls, and all the guys lived with the guys, and, you know, they were just very surprised and impressed by that. But when they would ask us questions about that, we weren't really allowed to get into it at all. Yeah, because
was that more for safety, or was that just part of the laws that you're trying to follow?
It's part of the laws. Yeah, it's part of the laws. So in Egypt, for example, in Cairo, there is a branch, but the Egyptian government and the church basically had an agreement that, you know, we could have a meeting place in Cairo as long as no Egyptian citizens attend the church. So that branch is just made up of expatriates that live there, that are either working there or studying there. But so, yeah, so we just weren't able to talk about the church because there was that fear that maybe they would want to attend church with us or, you know, things like that. And so we had to be very careful.
You're listening to Why I Believe on the Mormon Channel. Our guest today is Janice Frage, curator of education at the Arab American National Museum. Janice, as we've been talking about building bridges, what do you see as some of the ways that we can build bridges as Mormons between the Islam faith and other cultures in the world?
There's a lot of things that can be done. I think, for one, we as members of the church should really go out of our way to attend different cultural institutions, museums, mosques, synagogues, you know, things like that, so that we could gain more of an appreciation for all of God's children. Mm-hmm. I mean, yes, we believe strongly that we belong to the one true church, but I believe that it's still very important for us to learn about other faiths and learn about other cultures and to really reach out to people and to understand them. Because you see the similarities. I think so many times in the media and in the news, the focus is mainly on the differences and the animosity and the problems and the political strife, but you don't really ever hear about the connections between communities and religions. And so I think that as members of the church, I really do feel that it's our obligation to reach out to people and to really understand who they are and where they're coming from. And like I said, I think an easy way to do that is just by calling your local, even, you know, it doesn't have to be an institution of a different religion. You can even go to a Catholic church or mm-hmm. a Protestant church or whatever and just find out more about what they believe. I think that doing so, doing those things that I just mentioned, again, it helps us to appreciate God's children more, but then it also opens doors between us and them. Like, they might be more interested in what we believe. They might be very interested in finding out more about, you know, what makes us tick.
Yeah, and I can see that, how that would break down the barriers, people being concerned about, you know, what Mormons are. And when you break down those barriers by showing interest, the interest is reciprocated very easily, and they see that there's really no threat there to showing interest in what we have to share with them as well.
Right. I agree. Yeah.
Janice, are there any recommendations you have for members of the church to get to understand the Arab culture?
Yes, definitely. I mean, there are a lot of great books and websites out there. You do have to be careful, just like, for example, with our faith, when we want people to understand more about you know, the LDS faith, we don't just say go on the internet, because you never know what you're going to find there. So we usually lead them to specific sites. I personally have no problem if people were to contact me directly at the Arab American National Museum, and I can provide a list of resources, websites and books to read, and even people to talk to. Mm-hmm. So that is not a problem at all.
Is there resources on a website that you can share with us? A website
sure,
for the museum?
So if people would like to visit the museum's website, the address is www.arabamericanmuseum.org. Mm-hmm. And there are resources listed on there, and my contact information is also on the website. So if people would like to email me or call me, I would actually love that. I have no problem with that at all.
That's wonderful.
And then, yes, Daniel Peterson is also a great resource. One thing that I really like about Daniel Peterson and how he presents information is he's very objective, and he gives a historical background of Islam. And I think that's really, really important. So even before finding out about all the similarities and all the ways that, you know, we're alike, I think it's important to have everything put in context by learning a little bit about the history and, you know, how the religion even came about.
Janice, thank you for that recommendation. Actually, Daniel Peterson is going to be a guest on a new program that we have on the Mormon Channel called Insights that starts in October.
Oh, okay.
So we're excited to have him on, and we will talk to him about some of those things as well.
Great.
Janice, as we finish up today on Why I Believe, I'm always interested to hear why you believe in the gospel of Jesus Christ. Would you share that with us? Share your testimony with us, please.
I would love to do that. I believe in the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints for so many reasons. I would say that since I joined the church 15 years ago, I have felt so much love in my heart for my Savior and for my Heavenly Father, because I now understand them, and I understand their purpose for the entire world and their purpose for me. I have received so much direction in my life, and I know that without the Book of Mormon, specifically, I wouldn't have that direction. I can't even tell you the insights I gain on a daily basis as I read and study my scriptures. Things that it could even be an issue that I have with a friend or a colleague or something like that. And just through some scriptures that were written a long time ago, I'm given direction on how to handle situations and how to deal with certain people. So I am so grateful for the members that I have met in my 15 years of membership in this church, because I essentially am the only member in my family since my brother doesn't attend church anymore. And I've never felt alone. I've always felt encouragement and support by other members. I have my own, I call them my adopted Mormon family, that has been there for me since the beginning. And, you know, they have, the mother and the father in that family have essentially been my Mormon parents and have led me along. And I don't know what I would do without them. And I know that, you know, I really feel strongly that the Lord shows me that he loves me by leading me to incredible people in my life. And that's one of the things I'm the most grateful for, just the amazing members and non-members that have really directed me and supported me in all my endeavors. But I do have to say that I am so grateful for Joseph Smith and for everything that he did for the church and for humanity, for the world, for those both living and dead. And I'm also grateful for our modern-day prophet, Thomas S. Monson, and for his love that he has, for his example. And I look forward to General Conference every 6 months. I read the talks over and over again, because it's so apparent to me as I read them and as I listen to them that they were written for us, or that they were spoken, I guess, for us, to help us as we deal with modern issues that may not be talked about in our ancient scriptures. So I'm very grateful to be a member of this church.
Janice, thank you so much. We appreciate you being with us today and sharing with us your perspective from the Arabic culture and being a Mormon. You've been a great guest. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you.
We've been speaking with Janice Frage, Curator of Education at the Arab American National Museum, here on Why I Believe on the Mormon Channel. For more information on this program and other programs on the Mormon Channel, please visit radio.lds.org. Have a great day.